defeating the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who in many instances have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Remember that time that Bilal went feral in the stairwell?
Hey, can we please tell the story?
Just real quick, five minutes.
Things that happened. Yeah. Well, I got food poisoning. I got trapped in the stairwell. It's been a week.
Bilal's down bad.
I've been fucking down bad.
You were projectile vomiting all over the loft, I heard.
Oh my God.
And projectile shitting all over.
Yeah, I did shit myself. I guess we'll start with the stairwell chronologically. So Cameron is out of town.
Can I tell from my perspective?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I'm in Toronto on a work thing, and I'm getting, after this like thing I was at, I checked my phone. I have like 18 billion missed calls from numbers I don't know, and also Bilal's mom. And I'm like, what is this? Like, what could this be? So I called Bilal's mom back, and I was like, what's going on? She's like, you think you can leave Bilal by himself? I was like, what? She's like,
you leave my boy.
What did you expect was going to happen? I was like, what happened? She's like, Bilal's been locked in the stairwell for like over an hour. I was like, oh my God. So the stairwell logistics is there's an inside door, and then there's an outside door, and there's a stairwell in between. So if there's a key that's required for both doors, so if you don't bring your keys with you, you are trapped like a rat.
Well, because the top door locks behind you.
Yeah.
So,
and you need a key to exit.
So anyway, Bilal, go ahead and tell your.
So I'm cleaning up the loft. I'm like.
What are you wearing?
Trying to surprise. I'm wearing just like dirty gym shorts and that's it. Like, and I'm like, oh my God, Cam's going to come home. The house is going to be so clean. She's going to like be really happy. So I'm like busting my ass. This is like early on in the process, right?
Yeah.
Like it never materialized, but I was intending on. So I'm taking out all these recycles. I'm throwing these beer cans and the thing. And then I hear the door shut behind me. And I'm like, oh, that's. And sometimes it's still open. So I'm like trying to open it. And it took a second that I realized, oh, shit, I don't have my key, and I'm trapped in here, and I don't have my phone. So I had no, I'm just in this stairwell, and I have the key, and I'm not wearing, like, clothes, really. So I,
oh, my God.
And I worked in, like, maybe an hour and a half, something like that. So I'm like, I'm going to miss my shift because I was trapped in a stairwell. I have no sense of time. I go down to the street, and... I'm banging on the door because there's people walking. It's a busy street. There's people walking by.
You can just imagine the perspective of the person walking by.
Yeah,
the
and like it's in. Like, I don't want to dox ourselves, but like we're in the hood, right? Like,
yeah.
We're in Glengarry, kind of. So it's like, you know, there's weird shit happening, and I'm like banging on the door and yelling like, "Help! Help! Help!" People are walking by. I'm like, this nice Arab man stops and whatever. I'm like talking to him, trying to explain to him what happened, and he. I'm trying to get him to call my mom because I don't have anyone's number memorized, but I have my parents. So I'm like, trying to get him to call my mom. My mom's not answering. Another guy comes. He's trying to call my mom. All these people are trying to call my mom, get a hold of her.
Because that's the only number you can remember.
Yeah, they finally get a hold of her. And they're telling her, like, hey, I'm with your son. He's trapped.
It sounds like a scam right off the bat, too.
Literally. It's yeah.
Like, this is someone he's who's going to... You need to send me $4,000.
Literally. So I'm like, he's holding the phone up to the door, and I'm like telling her what happened. I'm like, you need to call Cam. Cam's not answering because Cam is she's on a job. So she's not checking her phone.
And you had to call Cam because Cam's parents have a key, right?
The only other people with a key are Cam's parents. So my mom had to call Cam to call her parents, and Cam's dad shows up and finds me.
My mom tells my dad, don't make fun of him. Specifically, like, do not make fun. Like, they felt so bad for him. And then
so it was honestly worse. It was so much worse.
You're just like scratching at the walls.
He comes
beer
in
cans.
And he's like, all right, Bilal, do you need anything? Are you good? And I'm like, wow, you think I'm so fucking dumb?
I just feel like
he should have roasted me. That's a normal thing to do. His fucking roast would be like, oh, you fucking dumbass. But it's like, do you think that little, you have that little expectation that you ask me if I'm all right, if I need anything. And I'm like, all right.
I can just like imagine you just like shirtless. You've pissed in a can at this point.
Yeah, I did. I peed in a beer can. I'm
just you're just like, there. You've gone completely feral. There's scratch marks on the wall.
What was Scooper doing the whole time?
Nito, yeah, the cat did not do shit. She was watching me.
We had to train Nito how to open the door.
Literally.
Anyway.
So that happens.
And then you got sick.
The next week, I got more sick than I've ever been in my entire life.
Okay, so can I talk about that for a sec?
Oh, do you mean, yeah, listen.
She's going to throw me under the bus.
Listen, we had a whole discussion about keeping banter tight, so I don't know.
I could keep it under 2 minutes.
No, okay. This is...
So we go to, should I say about the restaurant we went to? Probably not, eh?
Minghua?
Okay,
fuck Minghua. There.
Well, we go to Minghua, because...
Do we know it was Minghua?
Well...
Could it have these also are just been... the facts. This is where
this is just the facts.
This is the facts.
Okay.
It could have been something else. I'm not saying it was. Okay, anyway.
Anyway, so we go to buffet, okay? And then, what was that?
Someone
whooped. Yeah.
So we go to the buffet, da-da-da. Later in the evening, we go to a pizza place close by, and... Bilal orders 3 large cheese pizzas. We think they're normal size. They're like huge.
It's not a full pizza. No. It's like, okay, for people to know, it's like a little Arabic. It's like a cheese pie, like flatbread thing. It's like Arabic greasy street food. I've been eating this shit since I was like a fetus. So it's like, I don't think it was that but got me
he
sick.
Ate 3
But I did cheese eat, no. I ate pizzas. 2 on my break at work. This was around 7. And then I ate 1 at 1 a.m. So this was over a span of 5 hours.
Every time you tell this story, Cam, the size of the pizza gets larger.
No, it's
like now you're like it's like this big now. There's like it's like no, the biggest pizza you've ever seen.
These are like little flatbreads. It's like smaller than a pita. Anyway.
So Bilal wakes up at like 4 in the morning and he just sits up and projectile vomits all over the wall. My heirloom record collection. I had a clean puke from behind the records. Okay.
Yeah.
And and then he gets up and he pukes. He doesn't make it even close to the bathroom. He pukes again all over the carpet. Then he goes into the bathroom and pukes on his way there. He's puking. I am like, what the hell?
She's like just waking up.
Just peacefully asleep.
We had one roll of paper towel. That was it. And I was like, oh my God, we have to, like, there's so much puke everywhere.
Oh my God.
It was so bad.
Maybe it was salmonella.
Yeah, I think it was salmonella. Sounds like salmonella. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Did you have like chest congestion? Because that's also potentially.
As much. Yeah. I don't know, but. All I know is it hurt, and I don't know. About 9 days later, I was like, okay, I'm good. I could kind of eat food again.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Well, those are 2 stories.
That's we why kept that under 10 we haven't like been that. Podcasting.
That actually, yeah, it's that's a, that's a big reason. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're back, and we're back. In the meantime, a lot has happened.
Yeah. Turns out there was a lot of news that is on our beat, on our various beats. So we're going to do, like, this episode, we're going to try to do... You know, like, kind of keep it half and half, sort of half-do things, I guess. We'll see how that goes. But we're going to talk about the student protests in the United States and increasingly in Canada over Palestine. And just the unbelievable response from police, from the National Guard, from the universities that are empowering these people. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about what Joe Biden said regarding them, calling it chaos and saying the students are being anti-Semitic and all this shit. Just ridiculous shit from the president of the United States that's supposedly better than Trump somehow. I don't know how, but...
So worried about anti-Semitism. Maybe don't arrest the Jewish protesters that are there and, like, brutalize them.
Well, I mean, did you see that Biden literally said the fucking Trump line? There's something very close to the Trump line where he was like, oh, there's bad people on both sides. Like, he said the exact same fucking thing that Trump said about Black Lives Matter. But... it's just like, at this point, it's just comical. They're the same.
Yeah.
I don't see a functional difference between the two of them. But yeah, so we're talking about that. And then the other thing is the H4. I'm saying this to hold ourselves accountable to talk about it.
Yeah.
H4 moving.
Slash the mission.
And the mission, we just found out too, moving to a lot on Wellington and Wyandotte, basically. That's like technically in Ward 3. So technically in the downtown ward, but it's at the very literal edge.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't call it downtown.
It's not downtown. No, it's in Ward 3, the downtown ward. But, like, I live in Ward 3, but it's, like, a block from the edge. Like, I don't feel like I live downtown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, so we'll talk about those two things and kind of give our analysis and takes on that kind of thing. So do you want to start with the Palestine stuff?
Sure.
Yeah, cool. So if you haven't heard, there's been a widespread protests across the United States, arguably in terms of campus protests, the largest campus protests probably since the 60s. For the anti-Vietnam War protests that were, of course, made famous by Kent State and the police. I think maybe the National Guard shooting and killing four students at Kent State in 1968, I think. There's a great Neil Young song about it, among other things. But that's now happening again. We're seeing that happen again because students have, at first at Columbia University in New York, and they occupied the sort of public square portion of the university's campus and started pitching tents and just like hanging out there and demanding that the university divest itself from various Israeli lobbies and companies that contribute to the genocide in Gaza. And it was like the most peaceful protests possible. Like, we're talking like these kids are doing like arts and crafts and shit. Like, they're not, you know what I mean? Like, they weren't doing anything even particularly disruptive.
Yeah, they're just dancing. They're having teach-ins where they they're reading history books.
Literally, like doing nothing that like in a physical way is threatening anything. Yeah. And then they might have the timeline of this kind of messed up, but other universities started popping up doing the same thing, mostly in response to the fact that that Columbia University started getting militant with these protesters and saying, like, the president of Columbia coming out and basically saying there's going to be a time where we have to bring in the National Guard and the police to like do something about this. Of course, universities in the U.S. right now, they're a little bit later than us in terms of their calendar. So in Canada, we're basically done now. I think universities, at least for the winter semester, are wrapped up. But in the United States, they go till mid-May or late May. So they're still in class. It's like exam time and stuff down there for them right now. So I think like with commencement and shit coming up, universities really don't want this optically on their shit. So it started spreading to other campuses, and now there's a map that maybe we'll post a picture of, if I remember to do it, where there's hundreds of campuses around the United States and Canada, and in Mexico even, that are starting to have these. In Canada, there's a few. There's like University of Alberta, University of Toronto, Western, I think, has one as well. And then, but it's harder because like we're already, our school year's done here. So, you know, there's not as many people on campus, so it's gonna be interesting to see if this stuff takes hold in Canada, at least initially. It might in the fall, but
has the University of Windsor already divested from what was
I don't
when?
Believe so. This is actually something that I want to do some research on.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure. I think they've adopted like certain resolutions in favor of BDS, so they're not quite as bad as other ones, but
I mean, back in the day, I know there was a ton of them. To the point where when the Palestinian Solidarity Group started calling for BDS, they, you know, the university did a public slander campaign against Muhammad Akbar and like sued him and tried to ruin his life over this stuff. So like this stuff has happened in Windsor, and I know there's an episode of This Is False where we talked to Mo about what happened, and it was wild back then. Like just all this back and forth stuff. So I don't know if that's changed now. Maybe the university is less invested in Israel, but it used to be like a thing, like a lot here. So,
This is something we should do more research on.
Yeah, probably.
But just in general, like, you know, the idea of BDS is something that, like, I feel like we haven't really spoken about on this podcast, but I know we probably have, like, somewhat controversial opinions on.
Yeah,
compared to like the mainstream Palestinian movement. So BDS is, should we get into this a bit, maybe?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. And I think we'll get into it a little bit.
I think it's important, like theoretically.
First of all, what is BDS?
BDS is a campaign that started shortly after the blockade of Gaza began around 2005, 2006. I think started by like Omar Barghouti or something like that. One of these famous activists. But it was a call for boycotts, divestments, and sanctions for Israel. Mm-hmm. Supposedly modeled around the BDS movement in South Africa that current BDS proponents argue was responsible for the downfall of apartheid. In large part, which
it's a little bit of rewriting history.
It is completely rewriting history. It wasn't people in the West just boycotting South African products and shopping differently that led to the downfall of apartheid in South Africa. It was the literal revolution that South Africans themselves waged. I think in terms of BDS, there are certain aspects of it that, like, we agree with, certain aspects we don't agree with tactically. But I would preface this whole thing by saying that, like, in terms of the West, BDS more or less is the Palestinian Solidarity Movement. They are they're more or less synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Most Palestinian solidarity organizing is centered around this model.
Yeah.
And we defend these organizations. Mm-hmm. We will be on the front lines fighting alongside proponents of BDS. And in terms of the suppression that they face, I know, like, particularly in the States, there's a lot of legislation that has been passed or attempted to be passed that basically says, like, you could lose your job in certain fields, like if you're a teacher or something, who chooses to participate in BDS. So if you boycott Israeli products, you could lose your job if you're a teacher, which is really fucked up to think about, just like in terms of like a constitutional point of view. Like, that's wild.
Yeah.
It's a freedom of speech issue, freedom of expression issue. We defend against all this stuff. Like, we are pro the BDS movement in terms of what it has accomplished.
And what it stands for.
Too. Yeah, and what it stands for.
Yeah.
I think it has achieved a lot of awareness for Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say in terms of its effectiveness, that's about it. That's what it has done.
Well, I guess it's forced people to publicly denounce or not denounce their position too, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a university and you demand all these boycotts, divestments, and sanctions, and they don't do it, well, now you can, like, pinpoint the president of the university and any other of his cronies that, like, are Zionists, basically, right? It's a way to expose
exactly
some of that stuff as well. And so that's, like, extremely valuable in terms of, you know, awareness and showing who's on what side and for what reason.
Exactly. Like, what I would say our problem is with it is not in it in of itself. It's the lack of effectiveness of these tactics. Like, a consumer boycott, basically voting with your dollar in favor of freeing Palestine, is like recycling to stop climate change.
Right.
And I know, like, there are proponents of this that would argue and point to, like, Starbucks having to close locations in certain areas, or, like, the stock prices potentially plummeting and all this stuff. Starbucks being a major target of BDS.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced that the impact would be tangible enough to materially affect any sort of change on the ground in Palestine.
The way I always say it is, like, with just Starbucks as an example, but there's plenty of examples. There, at the end of the day, Starbucks as a company and its shareholders do not give a shit about this kind of stuff. They'll just maintain their profits, right? So if they don't get their profits the traditional ways they have been because of a boycott, what are they going to do? They're going to fire workers, they're going to shut down locations, and who does that ultimately hurt? Like, Starbucks is going to go trucking on, because the boycotts are never going to be so widespread that you're actually threatening Starbucks.
Exactly.
They'll just end up laying off workers.
And the Zionist CEOs are going to keep their jobs, and they're going to keep their
pay. They'll keep the profit margin right where it needs to be. They'll just cut costs in other ways.
Exactly. That's kind of the... I know there was a debate in the Palestinian Solidarity Movement a few years ago when Indigo, another major target of BDS boycotts, was attempting to unionize, or many of its locations were unionizing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of pro-Palestine activists were saying that they're against it because it's a Zionist organization and we don't want, like, they're basically saying, oh, you're part of the labor aristocracy, like, your union would be based on apartheid and stuff.
Right.
And I remember myself and other, like, socialist pro-Palestine people were saying, like, no, that's a garbage take. Like, the thing that would most effectively undermine these companies being Zionist is the unions. It's power worker to control. The workers, because those are the people that could actually hold management accountable and could hold the CEOs accountable. And I guess that's more of, like, the approach that we'd want to take.
Right.
Is, like, union-led. I'm not against boycotts inherently. I think there are a place for boycotts. But I think, like, union-led boycotts or unionization efforts, in a way that empowers us as workers, not as consumers.
Right.
Divestment, I think, is solid. I think, like, 100%. Divestment
and sanctions are a bit more,
I think sanctions are bullshit, but I think, like, divestment is, it does need to happen. And I think that's why I'm so supportive of these student encampments
yeah.
is because that's the specific aim that they're aiming right. for, is they're doing direct action towards yeah. an end of their institutions investing their tax money or sorry, no, their tuition money yeah. rather in genociding people.
Right.
Like the university I went to, this was the same thing where my literal tuition money, which they were profiting off of, they were increasing their profits by investing in companies that were like harming the environment and also building like weapons to kill my family overseas, yeah. basically.
And that's a lot of university infrastructure, especially in the wake of neoliberal cuts to education. Universities increasingly have to figure out ways to meet their budgets. And one of the ways that they've done that is by turning to corporate research sponsorships. And so like research and development, R&D, which, you know, from the perspective of a company, say an arms manufacturer, they have their own R&D departments, but if they can outsource some of their R&D to publicly funded institutions, that takes some of the financial burden off of them, right? And it's sort of seen as this like mutual beneficial thing where these students, maybe in engineering departments and other departments, are getting hands-on work in the field in order to save money for these companies. So that the universities across the world, but especially in North America, have really drilled down on this. So if you go to any engineering department in any North American university or college, you're going to see like some pretty scary fucking names in terms of like the companies that these departments are dealing with to get money. Arms manufacturers, like pharmaceutical companies, like some of the worst players in capitalism. And then universities are just helping subsidize their R&D departments with student labor. And so that's where these sort of BDS movements are attacking. They're saying like this is kind of the seat of power from a public institution standpoint of like accessing these companies, because we can tell our university, no, fuck you, divest from that shit. So yeah, they can go and pay for their own R&D, and they probably still will, but at least, like you say, our tuition money, our university, which is a public institution, is not doing that, you know? So that's kind of the crux of it.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess like the major disagree, probably the most utopian aspect of like BDS is the call for sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes from a like complete just misunderstanding of like how imperialism works. Because what is Israel? Israel is an offshoot of Western imperialism. It's a stronghold, mm-hmm. basically a foreign military base of ours that happens to have an ethno-state attached to it. But fundamentally, it's a foreign military base for NATO in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. We're not going to sanction our allies in that yeah. way. Like the idea that like you can get the Trudeau government or the Biden government to sanction Israel towards the purposes of it not being what it is, which mm-hmm. is a military fucking stronghold, is just silly.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to call for that. And I know a lot of, it's weird because like the Communist Party calls for this. The mm-hmm. Marxist-Leninist Party locally calls for this. And these are people who, like, in theory, know better. And I think they wouldn't be disagreeing with what I'm, like, saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more of a call towards this to be like, okay, well, you're sanctioning Russia for what it's doing in Ukraine. Why is there not a consistency in yeah. terms of when sanctions are being levied and in our attitudes towards different countries? And it yeah. just shows that international law, war crimes, all these things are political, what's the word, devices
yeah.
to be employed when we prefer to.
And I mean, importantly too, the ICC did issue arrest warrants for Netanyahu and other.
Did they do that?
They
I thought
did.
They were going to.
Or they were going to. They were prepared to. I'm not sure if they actually did or not. I thought they did. I thought I saw somewhere that they did. But they were either way, they were prepared to issue arrest yeah. warrants for Netanyahu and other top Israeli officials for war crimes. Yeah. And basically, you know, the United States and Israel do what they do, and said, basically told the ICC that if they did that, they would sanction them or mm-hmm. like fuck with them, basically.
Right. And then they put out another statement being like, that would also be illegal.
Yeah, exactly.
And we investigate yeah. you for that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting.
But they don't care, because at the end of the day, these organizations are set up by liberal democracies, and liberal democracies have the ultimate power over them to say, nah, we're not going to listen to your shit, right? Mm. Like, I mean, I don't know if was it the ICC that charged George W. Bush at one point? Or was that a different...
I'm not sure, actually.
I thought there was one of them that charged George W. Bush with war crimes, and that never went anywhere, because why would it, right?
Yeah, it would never go anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because Putin was clapped with charges immediately, and with yeah. an arrest warrant immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
Which you'll also never see, likely. Yeah. Likely, we'll never see. come to fruition.
Exactly. But. So that's, I think that's, I know we like kind of dwelled on this point, but it's a point that we've been hinting at for a while. Whenever mm-hmm. we talk about Palestine, we've kind of made like offhand remarks about like, oh, a boycott, but that's silly. But we haven't mm-hmm. elaborated on kind of like where our perspective is on that. It's not a huge disagreement. We're not like, oh, fuck this. But we are kind of just like, it's a different point of emphasis. We emphasize right. more the need for labor power and organizing our class, not organizing ourselves as consumers.
Yeah. yeah.
Which
yeah.
is fragmented and individualistic.
But I think like to bring it back to these protests, what makes these protests so powerful is that they've reached the point where the mainstream news can't ignore them
yeah.
because they're so massive. And because the response to them has been so violent, now the mainstream media has to talk about it. Now, all of a sudden, every American knows this is happening, right?
Exactly.
The ones that have been maybe trying to bury their head in the sand about Israel-Palestine the last 6 months, or maybe they heard about it, but they're like, oh, I don't care, it doesn't involve me, are now like, well, now it does. Now it does involve you because this shit's happening in your community. And mm-hmm. I think that's actually like the big, one of the big values of a protest movement this size, even if it is largely symbolic, it's still...
I don't think it's largely symbolic. It's not largely symbolic,
but even if it were to be largely...
I think it's material for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, like, I know we talked about how, like, okay, apartheid in South Africa was not ended through BDS, but mm-hmm. the Vietnam War, I think there's a stronger connection mm-hmm. between this movement and that versus BDS in South Africa. Because mm-hmm. the student movement in Vietnam was beyond crucial.
Yeah.
They made it political suicide to support the war at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the combination of, you know, A, the resilience of the Viet Cong fighting,
right.
which you could draw a line towards, you know, the Palestinian resistance,
yep.
in conjunction with the war effort being undermined from the imperial core,
yeah,
which is kind of what's happening with this.
Yeah. And it, like, I think it represents one of the prime, like, well, actually, like, you know, we talk a lot as Marxists about the different contradictions in society, right? And how these contradictions will synthesize into something else, you know? I mean, what that is up for debate. But I think this is one of those prime contradictions in American, and by virtue extension, Canadian society right now, is that you have, you know, in liberal democracies pride themselves on the First Amendment in the United States and in Canada, our right to free speech, that we can lawfully assemble and you know, challenge authority when it's like, you know, something that we disagree with. And when you see that happen, then you see the clampdown on that sort of, and that's such a huge contradiction in liberal democracy, right? Because how can you both have this wonderful liberal democracy where we all have our say and we all have this like beautiful ability to vote for our people, and then crack down on actual dissent the second it crosses a line? And it's interesting because most dissent they don't crack down on, right? I mean, you could protest climate change, you could protest all kinds of things, and for the most part, unless they get really big and start fucking with infrastructure, you can do it without getting your head cracked in, right? But this particular thing, mm-hmm. I think the state's response to it, and again, like, if you don't know what we're referring to, basically Colombia empowered the NYPD to go into Columbia's campus. The students were occupying a building on campus that they had renamed to Hind Hall, which is actually a reference to the 60s anti-Vietnam thing. And some students were occupying this hall, and they essentially sent the NYPD in to smash down the windows and arrest everybody. And it's violent as shit, and it happened in the middle of the night. It was terrifying. They ushered all of the media off the campus before they did it. They literally, like, they kettled the media and got them off campus and then went and did it. So all the video that we have of it is actually from students mm-hmm. who were either in the protest or were like in residence that could see the hall. And so they're taking videos from their residence. And it's absolutely fucking terrifying. A gun was shot by a police officer. Didn't injure anybody, thankfully, but that was the thing. And this is happening at other universities as well. University mm-hmm. of Portland had a similar thing. UCLA was fucking, they actually ran the cops back. The protesters mm-hmm. actually ran the cops out of their area, which is awesome, but also the LAPD has another one of those institutions with a long history of just not giving a fuck about the law and what mm-hmm. you know, not that any cops do, but really the LAPD and the NYPD are two of the worst.
Right. Yeah, they have snipers trained on their yeah. students.
Yeah, the University several. Of Michigan had snipers mm-hmm. on the roof of their buildings.
Right.
Like, and these are people that, again, like we said, they're doing crafts, they're having teach-ins, they're reading books, they're dancing. It's yeah. like not, Like none of this shit is violent.
Their professors are joining them in large part.
And getting their heads knocked in.
It's interesting with, like, Columbia, because Columbia is where Edward Said was based out of, who is, you know, obviously, like, one of the most important academics of the 20th century in terms of modern academia at large, whether it's pro-Palestine or not. It's all based on Saidism to an extent, you know, the post-colonial studies kind of that you see everywhere now. And Columbia never hesitates to flex that. They never hesitate to use that notoriety, or even use the notoriety now of the legacy, rather, of, like, the student protests there in the 60s and how that ended the Vietnam War.
Black mark on Columbia's record, but...
Exactly, and they acknowledge, like, hey, we fucked up back then, but we're better now. We honor these students as, like, civil rights heroes, yet they're doing the same thing now, but through, like, kind of the veneer of post-colonialism and framing it as, oh, we need to protect against these disruptive anti-Semite Hamas supporters, and we need to keep Jewish students safe. And actually, do you want to see the most ridiculous thing I've ever fucking seen? So... this is from John McWhorter, who's a professor at Columbia. And basically, to preface, there's a famous composer that you learn about in music, any music course, called John Cage. He has a piece called 433, which is basically a silent piece of music, where the point is you're supposed to, like, observe your surroundings, and it's not really silence because you're breathing and you're in a room and... and so on, right? It's meant to be this, like, kind of philosophical thing. He put out this article in the New York Times saying, last year in the music humanities class I teach at Columbia University, two students were giving an in-class presentation on the composer John Cage, his most famous piece, 433, which directs us to listen to silence in silence to surrounding noise for exactly that period of time. I had to tell the students we could not listen to that piece that afternoon, because the surrounding noise would not have been birds or people walking by in the hallway, but infuriated chanting from protesters outside the building. So, literally, like...
not the kind of silence we want.
Yeah, there's this tweet. The protests are robbing my Columbia students of listening to John Cage's 433, the piece of music that is explicitly designed to force you to listen to what's around you.
Yeah.
And it's...
like, he's missing the point. Yeah, he's
missing
bit.
The entire fucking point. Listen to what's around you. You're in the middle of a huge civil rights movement. Yeah. These people are organizing to stop a genocide, and you're like, we have to block this out. We have to live in our echo chamber, in our post-colonial intersectional echo chamber.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because, like, liberals have weaponized now this you know, like, woke language, right? And, like, you see Joe Biden say all this stuff, oh, we have to protect these students. Like, Joe Biden came out and had this whole speech about how they're creating chaos on campus and that they are, you know, the good and bad people on both sides. Where have you heard that before? You know, like, yeah, it's again, I think it's highlighting a really prime contradiction in North American society right now, in Western society in general, that, like, these two things cannot exist at the same time. We cannot both have a society that supposedly prides itself on free speech, on assembly. We cannot have an establishment that prides itself on being woke, on saying that, oh yeah, we appreciate the rights of indigenous people and of LGBTQ people and of black people, and then go and wantonly support a genocide and crush the resistance to that. Right, it's one of those contradictions that I think is just it's being played out right now, and I think it's emblematic of a falling of something, whether it's the U.S. empire, whether it's of Israel. I really truly do believe we're seeing the falling of something through this particular particular thing, which is again both good and bad, right? Because we don't want to see students getting their head cracked in at all, but at the same time, the fact that they are shows you that this is something to pay attention to.
Well, we're
right?
basically seeing a student intifada in the West. And this is not something that should be, like, underestimated in terms of its impact beyond, like, tangibly what it accomplishes right now in the immediate, which it's too soon to say, but I honestly think this is not going to simmer down.
No.
I think this
now
stage
it's not,
in the conflict has reached such a point where all the contradictions we've been talking about are coalescing around this issue. And it's not just Palestine.
Right.
Palestine represents something bigger in this stage of imperialism in the West, right? It's this idea in Marxism of sort of like a triggering point or a quantitative shift, right? There have been there's been a buildup of so many different issues, so much shit that's been happening. And this is like, on top of this, there's a genocide now. We're spending billions of dollars supporting a genocide. And this is the lesser evil guy. Yeah. This is supposed to be the good guy who's doing this. Biden, who, it's a whole, I'm tangentializing.
Yeah. But it's important because, like, we have the United States has an election this year where we're just running back.
And this is going Biden to be blamed on Trump.
Yeah, somehow.
What Biden is doing is going to be blamed on Trump.
Yeah. But Biden's eviscerating his base right now because, like, he's just like handing himself the L here. He is, in a lot of ways.
But that's the thing is Biden has no ideology except for Zionism. Like Biden is he's the like archetypical politician in so many ways where whatever lobbyists or donors are able to just like give him a policy and he will do that and he's good at doing that. The one thing that he is ideological about is his commitment to Israel. Yeah. And this goes back to him being a young senator in like the 80s. There's a quote from some, I forget what this article is, but in 1982, Israel invaded Lebanon and caused so many casualties that everyone from President Ronald Reagan to Democratic senators expressed outrage. One exception, the young senator from Delaware, Joe Biden. So Joe Biden was on the opposite side of Reagan. Even Reagan was like, slow the fuck down. And we think that Trump is going to be like somehow worse on this issue. Like,
it's not possible to be worse.
You can't.
How are you going
to
be worse?
Exactly. This is lesser evilism. Yeah. This is what you're saying is we need to support the guy who does the genocide, who is so committed to this genocide and who has said, you know, these protests have not swayed me at all. Like, he's willing to take an L in this election and let the greater evil happen.
Maybe he's not calculating anything. He's sundowning. But people around him might be calculating that they don't need the vote of social democratic left or students. They're just saying we can beat Trump without it, so fuck it.
They might be able to beat Trump without it.
Or they're still going to point and say, well, Trump will be worse or just the same, so you have to vote for us anyway.
But that's the thing is they're going to attack single issue voters and they're going to say like, okay, well, they're not even going to pretend to be good. They're just going to say Trump is worse.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Trump's good on this issue. Like, in a lot of ways, his Abraham Accords and the Saudi normalization plan between Israel and Saudi Arabia, that what was the impetus for this Hamas attack and that, you know, led to the point where Hamas got so desperate that they were willing to launch this kind of offensive. But it's so much more complicated than that. Because at a certain point, there was going to be a breaking point. Whether it was Trump's policy or Biden's policy, at a certain point, these people who were trapped in a cage in this concentration camp were going to lash out like this. And something like this was going to begin. Right?
Yeah.
The way, like, it's happened time and time again with Palestinian history. As soon as movements exhaust themselves and get to the point where things are so desperate, the masses kind of explode. This happened in the intifadas. This happened in the second intifada. This is happening again now, right? Mm-hmm. This was going to happen.
Right.
So just blaming it on like this politician or that politician, or now the liberal center is blaming it on Netanyahu because they know they're fucked and they know that the war is lost in a lot of ways. Their war aims are unachievable. Mm-hmm. So they're just making it about big bad Bibi.
Yeah.
Instead of the Zionist system.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think we should wrap up that conversation because you have to leave in like 15 minutes or so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we should get to H4. But yeah, so they just we'll probably end up talking about this again in the future. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And I think even if it does for the summer, I think it's going to come back in the fall.
Yeah.
So, and maybe more in Canada, let's hope, because, you know, students will be back on campus in September and I doubt this is going to be...
Well, U of T and McGill, Concordia, they've all Western, launched ones already. Yeah. Western has. University of Windsor should.
Yeah, it should. I'm interested to see if that sustains itself over the summers, though. It's in the States, too. I'm interested to see if it does, because a lot of students, like, they have to go. It's like, you know, they're not... Maybe not in Columbia, because a lot of New York students go there, so that's a different thing, but...
Right.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this continues.
We'll see.
Yeah. But solidarity with the students, as always.
Speaking of encampments,
we
have them here too.
Yeah. Do you want to tee up this story a bit? Either one of you want to?
We started talking about this a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
This idea of like downtown. I think the episode was revitalize or gentrify.
Yeah.
This idea that the city is taking issues of homelessness and poverty seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And now there have been some announcements that...
We saw coming. We talked about
this. Yeah, we did see potential. This.
Yeah.
A location for H4, which is the Housing and Homelessness Help Hub, located at Waterworld currently, which is like the Glengarry neighborhood, is going to be getting a new location. And they're bolstering this as like, oh, we're funding the program more. We're building it a brand new facility with like 60 something like beds and stuff. So it's going to be like a more of an overnight thing. We're expanding services. Cool. That's great.
Sure.
The problem is this is being moved outside of downtown.
Yeah. Move over to Wellington, Wellington and Wyandotte, as we mentioned. It's at the fringe edge of Ward 3. It's basically the West End. It's,
yeah.
It's over by, I think that's actually the corner that Leopards is on. If people, everybody knows where Leopards is.
Yeah, it's like on the block of where that Tim Hortons and the multi-food is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that's like, that's on Crawford.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's
on
the
other side. Oh, it's a little bit past that.
Yeah, a little bit past that, okay. Yeah.
Oh, right. You're right.
Yeah, a couple of blocks past that. But yeah, it's in that. It's right where Leopards is, basically just across the street and behind the first row of houses there.
Yeah.
And it's like a, it's a massive lot. So they think they've solved the problem, right? This is the thing, and we'll get to maybe what Fabio said in a second, the Ward 2 councillor, who is, I think, the only councillor that's really come out against this, yeah, right?
Fred Francis voted against it as well, he to did. His credit.
Yeah,
For once. Surprising, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird to see Fabio and Fred being the only two resisting something.
Yeah.
I wonder if the difference, if the reasons why are different, I don't know, but...
I'm sure with this total speculation... But I'm sure with Fred, it's more about the physical
reality. He's conservative, right?
That's what he did say.
They're going to be sinking a shit ton of money in building a new facility out of nowhere.
Why do we need to build a new facility? Yeah. That's the thing.
As if we don't have enough buildings. As if we don't have a Windsor Arena where that's been sitting empty right next to it.
Right. And this is my issue with this is always like, are we focusing short-term or long-term here? Because short-term, do we need more shelter space and beds? Yeah, okay. But this isn't a short-term thing. This is a long-term infrastructural project that is expected to last decades because they're building a whole new facility for it. So this is them saying, implicitly, in my opinion, we have no intention of dealing with the homelessness issue. We're just going to shove it to the very edge of Ward 3 where you can't see it.
Exactly. Away from the businesses and in a residential area that's full of poor people.
Yes.
So we don't care.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because... those, it might as well be the same population.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a revolving door between the two.
Exactly. Right? And that's not to say that it's ideal that it's in Glengarry, which is also a struggling neighborhood, but...
But at least it's central.
It's central and it's near other resources. Because if you are experiencing homelessness, you need to be able to get to often the Welcome Center, which is down the street on Tuscarora. You need to be able to get to Pleasure to access harm positive reduction pathways, supplies at Positive Pathways. You need to be able to get to the Mission. You need to be able to get to the Salvation Army. You need to be able to go wherever you need to go. But so pushing
the ODSP office, which actually I guess is kind of out of the way anyway, but it's further away from the ODSP office, right?
Exactly.
Like where oftentimes folks have to go.
What's concerning is like there's no way there was any consultation for this.
No.
H4 was not quoted in any article. No one from them was ever asked. They did ask the Mission, but
the Mission's happy about this, and this is the problem. It's been the problem with the Mission for as long as I've been in this city, is that they are all too willing to buy into the same bullshit. So they're moving as well.
Yeah.
The Mission is also, they announced, I think today, maybe yesterday, that they're also moving down to this location eventually once it's like ready to go. So they're literally just concentrating all of the like shelter and housing into one block of a residential neighborhood away from businesses. And this is, of course, it's not a coincidence. This came out right after Drew Dilkins and his revitalization plan that he announced, right? Mm-hmm. All of this stuff is working in concert with one another.
Yeah.
And everything that we know by looking at the research, by talking to people, is that this is a bad move and will actually harm the people you say you're trying to help. And again, I don't think it's that they're trying to help it. I want to like emphasize that point again. This is the city acknowledging they do not want to do anything about homelessness because they wouldn't be sinking this many millions of dollars in infrastructural projects into homelessness if they planned on solving it
literally,
in any meaningful
why
way.
Are you building a facility? Like Waterworld makes sense as a location because this was an abandoned building and they're like, okay, we're going to create it's a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
It is a Band-Aid solution. You don't keep Band-Aids on forever.
No.
These people are like, we're just going to keep, I don't know. I can't think of an analogy. But you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's...
But they're acknowledging that they don't have any interest. Because they could. Again, we talk about this all the time. They could solve this problem. Maybe not alone on the city level, but definitely between the province and the federal government and local governments. We could solve homelessness in this country in months if we wanted to, mm-hmm. in a matter of months. And like, it's just, it's again, like, why not, why are we not taking that money and building in a public housing infrastructure? Right? Mm-hmm. It's like $60 million or something like that, that they're spending on this. Like, combine all these fucking stupid projects together with the Celestial Beacon, this fucking mm-hmm. thing, all the dumb things this city's, like the Jackson Park lights, all the dumb things this city spends ungodly amounts of money on. And like, they don't do anything to actually solve this problem that they all claim is such a huge fucking problem that they really, really care about, right? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, there was an amazing, like, Ronaldo posted about this.
Ward 3 council.
Yeah, posting counselor. About this plan and how it's huge. And I just wanted to read one of the comments on it because I thought it summed up better than I could say. But someone commented, another boondoggle, no transparency against all best practices, and we still have no idea what this plan entails. The only thing is certain is that the city is trying to shift all of the homeless people from downtown onto a residential area that they don't give a crap about because it's not full of rich people. There's nothing substantive to address deep-rooted social problems that can't be fixed with a hub in the middle of nowhere. This is a superficial PR stunt at best that does nothing, and at worst exacerbates the problem while costing taxpayers an obscene amount of money. Yeah. So even fiscally, this makes no fucking sense. Like, you're going to expropriate this property and build a huge facility.
Yeah.
The fact that they're willing to invest in a facility like this just goes to show that they have no interest in solving it. Yeah. Because they're like, look, we are building infrastructure to maintain the fact that there's going to be homelessness ongoing. That's what they're saying to us, and I refuse to allow that to be the case. Like, I if anyone's taking this seriously or wants to actually help these people, you wouldn't be investing in building this like super mission H4 hub, like it, especially outside of downtown, because it's, and we were talking to just even a local business owner last night who said, like, what do they think is going to happen? Like, all of a sudden, all the homeless people are going to be out of the downtown, and downtown's going to boom.
Yeah, that's literally prosperity. What they think. That's literally what they think is going
to
happen.
That's the reason why downtown sucks. Everyone, are you kidding me?
Talk to a lot of people who come downtown who aren't poor, and they think the problem with downtown is homelessness. Right? They think that's the reason the downtown sucks and is dirty, and there's not really any, like, the businesses are struggling and closing up and whatever else. Is because of homeless people.
Yeah, literally. Exactly.
Like, not because of fucking landlords.
Exactly.
That are charging obscene amounts of money.
Exactly.
For businesses to operate in spaces. So we're losing a lot of culturally important businesses. And, we're not huge supporters of business as a thing. But culturally important businesses that are downtown where people gather, important to the community.
I'd rather have a fucking, I don't know, without simping for, like, the petty bourgeois.
Yeah.
I would rather have a downtown with small businesses, with venues, with places to go, like, especially as a musician. Because, like, if you don't know this, like, Craftheads is gone.
It's going to be gone.
Is probably going to be gone.
Likely on its way after. And like, they're
because
moving.
The same landlord.
They're moving to different places, but they're going to move to a totally other area of the city because it's cheaper and landlords there you can actually deal with instead of the ones downtown.
A landlord bought up both of these businesses, raised the rent through the roof to a point where it's,
it's obscene.
It's obscene.
Yeah.
Like, over $10,000 a month to run a dive bar.
Right.
These places are going to be gone, and all the other venues are going to be affected around that. So buy our music scene, buy culture in the city, and these places are going to sit empty until eventually they get through all the miles and miles of red tape to be able to build a fucking condo that rich people from Toronto are going to be living in. How is this revitalizing downtown? This has nothing to do with...
It is in their minds.
Literally, point the finger at the people who are the problem, not the people who are getting fucked over by the landlords. Mm, that's what's being blamed. You blame the powerless, not the people with the fucking power. Yeah. And
we learned, too, you can expropriate property. So why the
fuck... Yeah, they did it for this thing.
And why the fuck are they not protecting these culturally significant community spaces? For example, like... Let's just say Fog, for example. Yeah. People gather there. There's a community that's built around this space.
We did our Palestine show there, for Christ's sake. Like, I've been a vocal critic of Fog in a lot in my life.
Yeah.
And I still am.
And it's fair. And I think, but it also is like, these are buildings that are culturally significant to the city, and especially downtown. It's like, without these spaces, I don't know where I would go downtown. And like, it makes life a little bit better to have a space like this 100%. In my community. And so the fact that like the city can choose, oh, we're going to expropriate this land, but they're not going to protect these culturally significant spaces, you know, in the city is crazy to me. Cause it's like, oh, like even the fact that like the West Side, why the fuck haven't they expropriated those properties and created like social housing for us?
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
They could.
Why are we protecting like Maddie Maroon's contract on stolen indigenous land?
Bible.
I gotta go. You guys keep going.
It's on stolen indigenous land, and we respect more a contract with a billionaire who's dead from Michigan and fucking over like land and housing that we have available right now in Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
yeah, no, it's
why
wild.
Are we respecting this? Why do we respect this contract more than we respect what our communities are facing?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really good point.
Do what actually matters. Like building an H4 hub, this, like, we should not be doing this. And also, like, Irek Kuzmierczyk just put out this whole like PR thing about how he's touting, there's that Hunter building on
HMS.
Yeah, he's like, oh, we're gonna give this to developers so they can build
affordable housing,
whatever the fuck that means. Yeah. Anyway, and I'm like, why don't we just put the fucking, if you needed a building, that's a perfect building.
It's a central hub.
Yeah. And no, it's vacant.
Yeah. No, and like, I think that the point you make about how the city can expropriate land, like, governments, like, I think that there's too often we consider governments to be powerless, right? Like, whether it's the state, the federal government, provincial, local governments, I think it's a fallacy to suggest that they aren't powerful entities, because they can do so much shit, right? Like the city of Windsor, yeah, you're right. They can expropriate a piece of land that they don't think is being used the way they'd like it to be used. They can literally legally force the owners to sell it and take it over. And yeah, they could do that with a lot of other things too, but they don't, right? It's only for this kind of shit that, like, you know, so they can hand more fucking property to developers.
Mm-hmm.
And just like to wrap up a little bit. So like, I got laid off recently from my job, and so one of the things that I was like looking to do, I used to help run the Loop and the Fish Market downtown years ago, and I liked it and thought I was pretty good at it. So I was gonna start up a music venue with some friends of mine that have money, and you know, we looked into it. We looked into downtown. Like, it has to be downtown. It has to be within a few blocks of Fog, Meteor, Craftheads, Villains, because like that's where the culture happens, and like these businesses feed off each other. Like, for instance, Craftheads had a show the other night, huge show, and it let out at like 11 o'clock and everybody came to Fog. Now on a Tuesday night, two businesses are doing extremely well because they're so close to each other, because you can go from one to the other. You have a venue in isolation, nobody goes.
Yeah, you got, say Fog and Craftheads were to go. What happens to Meteor? What happens to Villains?
Yeah.
All the restaurants around there.
Yeah, that people go to before and after shows. Like, these are, like, I think too often we see, oh, you don't, like, there's the whole, this, AJ is going to be mad at me because he keeps telling me about this phenomenon, but like the ice cream shop example, that if you have an ice cream shop and you want to open an ice cream shop, you actually open it next door to the other ice cream shop, because if that ice cream shop gets super busy, the overflow is going to come to yours, and it's actually going to help both businesses, right? You don't put them at opposite ends of the city.
Yeah, exactly.
You put them in the same fucking spot.
Yeah, it's traffic.
Yeah, and so anyway, so we're looking around at places, and like, just where the Crazy Horse used to be. So like Park and Willette, basically beside the there's the post office, and it's like a vacant lot, and then the next building there, it's got a black marquee over it. That used to be called the Crazy Horse. Awesome building. Really fucking weird and cool. It's got that marquee. It's got a bay window in the front for no reason. It looks amazing. And they have been sitting on that property for 12 years now. It's been vacant for 12 years, and they still won't rent it. Like, I think we got a rental price from them, but it was something like $11,000 a month.
Come on.
And like, the going rate for that kind of shit, even a few years ago, was $2,000 to $3,000 at most, right? So now they're charging $11,000, which is like, basically they're telling us like, go fuck yourself. Because they know the city will get mad if they just refuse to rent it. So they're like, we're not refusing to rent it. We're just going to rent it for $11,000. So nobody will fucking take it. And it just sits there empty. But yes, the homeless are the problem. You know what I mean? Like, fucking...
If you want to go for a walk downtown and you are realizing, oh, like, there's not a lot of people down here, maybe because there's not a lot of businesses opened or things to do.
Yeah.
And that is because there are landlords like that that want... This is so common that downtown Windsor, they're asking an obscene amount of money. $10,000 is a normal amount that they're now asking for people to be paying
in
rent.
For normal-sized commercial spaces.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like... The amount of spaces that I know for a fact that are because of a landlord who's asking for $10,000, like that, you point the finger to the landlords, you point the finger to the city and the politicians because they have the power to do something and they want you to be like, oh, it's the homeless. It's not the homeless. It's they have power.
Yeah. And like, yeah, homeless folks are going to congregate in areas where there are other businesses and things that they need, right? That's just what happens. That's why you don't typically see as much homelessness in like rural communities. Although it's becoming so fucking prevalent now that it is showing up in smaller communities, right? Like we've talked on this show about Cobourg, Ontario, and it's like fucking moral panic they have over their encampment. Yeah. And like, oh my God, with all this like pearl clutching of professional middle class people, it's fucking unbelievable. But
can I tell you something kind of funny? This is from a while ago, but when Ronaldo was running for the Ward 3 councillor, which is downtown, I just found his downtown plan or whatever that he posted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of the ideas he had was to solve the, you know, beautification problem of downtown or whatever that is. He wanted to create structures, like anti-homelessness structures that go into doorways of abandoned or like vacant buildings downtown. But don't worry, they're going to be cool structures created by local artists.
But this is what happened.
Like,
and you know what? He'll find artists to do it too. That's the crazy thing. I mean, like I've, meaning we don't need to talk about it now because we are already over an hour, but like there's so many instances where like artists become part of the gentrification project. They're actually used as part of the gentrification project, right? They make an area cool, and then look, this is what's happening. Like downtown, like as it used to be and as it still kind of is cool. There's like cool shit going on downtown. There's a Capitol Theater, there's Fog, there's all these things. There used to be more. There used to be way more venues, way more cool shit going on downtown, and it's withering away.
Yeah.
But it used to be cool. And now you're seeing this divestment, which is a very important cycle of gentrification. You divest from an area, you let rot take over. And then, the only people who are around are homeless folks because everyone else is not there because there's nothing going on, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you're fully divested and all the cool businesses and artists have been kicked out of an area, they come in with the fucking condos, make sure they never come back because it's like way too expensive. This, like Halifax is a really good case study of how this works because I think maybe Vancouver, but more than any other city in Canada, Halifax's like rapid gentrification project has just been wild to see. And like talking to people who've lived there for a long time and how much the city has changed, they had a similar thing. Their downtown used to be the cultural hub of the city. They went through a similar divestment project. And now if you go to downtown Halifax, it's literally like a tourist trap hellhole. It's all fucking giant condos that crowd these really old streets that like don't have the infrastructure to support the people. So like it's this whole thing. The city's doubled in size in like 10 years population wise. So the infrastructure just can't handle it. And like, so they have these massive condos, fancy condos overlooking these streets. All the cool businesses, all the cool old buildings are getting fucking torn down. And like, you know, then they moved over. All the artists went to the North End. So they're like, okay, fine. We'll seed the downtown. We're going to go make the North End cool. And the North End of Halifax became one of the most culturally important neighborhoods in this country over the last 20 years. Incredible shit happening there. Just lots of artists. Became a queer hub of Canada. Like if you lived in the East Coast and you were queer, you weren't surviving in your small town in the East Coast. These are incredibly conservative communities. And so queer folks en masse basically moved to Halifax and turned the North End into their own little place where they could be. So all this like cool art's happening, all this fucking awesome, culturally rich shit is going on there. And now the same process is happening, where they're doing the same thing that we're doing downtown here now, where their landlords are buying up spaces, jacking up the rent, kicking out these cool businesses. Now all of a sudden they're replaced with artisan donut shops and shit like that. Fucking absolute garbage down there now. And the same thing's happening. They're building up all these massive condos and completely reshaping the skyline. All while now the artists are moving over to the Quinpool neighborhood to do the same thing over there. And they just keep bouncing around, right? And this cycle of gentrification. And we had it here with Walkerville, Fort City. Now it's downtown. Like, we see this happen, right? And in Windsor, it seems to be always half-assed. Like Walkerville was kind of complete, but Ford City seemed like a half-assed gentrification project. They didn't really finish. And they're just like, Ford City sucks now. Let's go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But like, and now maybe Erie Street's going to be the next one, because that seems like where all the cool businesses are going to go. So that's where all the artists are going to go. We're going to spend years building that up into a cool place, and the same fucking thing is going to happen. And it's just like...
It's so crazy to me that like we forfeit this, our communities to landlords to make these... the worst decisions for our communities and for the culture of our cities. If we want cool cities, if we want to have livable cities that we have autonomy over as the community, we need to take our cities back from, maybe I shouldn't say that as a phrase, take our community back, but in a way,
in a way, that's what we gotta do.
We do, because it's just not right. They don't have good ideas.
No, fucking rich people suck. They're culturally vapid assholes.
They are.
Like, I mean,
they're tacky and they're cheesy.
We're releasing an episode next week with Ed from, what's his last name?
DeRoche.
Ed DeRoche from Apollo Sons, where we talk about some of this stuff. I'm not on it, but you and Bilal do it. And same kind of conversation. Like, when art becomes the domain of the rich, art sucks.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's Taylor Swiftified.
It is. I love that.
Swiftified?
Swift.
Yeah, if you're Swifties out there, you come at me. I don't care. She sucks.
They're not listening to the podcast.
Well, you never know. Oh, there's maybe. Swifties everywhere. You never know. Never but mind. We'll get emails. Like, we'll get emails.
Come at me, Swifties.
But yeah, that's probably a good place to wrap up. But H4 moving to the middle of nowhere.
Boo.
Fucking horrible. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of, like, write your counselor and tell them you hate it, because it usually doesn't do shit. But maybe you need to, fuck it. Like, we got to do something about this shit. Right? And also, like, the other thing is this is now pegged for years from now. They still have to go through a whole expropriation process for the land and, like, build it and get the money and all that shit.
Yeah.
I think there's, like, a 50% chance this never happens. It's just, it ends up being one of those things that we keep hearing about is going to happen, and it doesn't, you know, like
just
that.
Just know, like, what that represents is they represent not caring about the issue, not ever wanting to solve it.
Yeah.
Band-aid, more money, give more money to developers to build a thing so that It's the same shit over and over again. They don't care about homeless people. They don't care about poor people. They want to hide them from the downtown.
Yeah, that's
always been
it.
the thing. They just hide them.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck. And also, it's so stupid. It's not going to revitalize downtown to hide the poor people. I'm sorry. That's not what's going to happen. No. Think of Detroit or Toronto. Do people avoid those cities because there's homeless people everywhere? No. They go despite it. You know what I mean? In many cases, if you're a Francis and you hate seeing poor people, you're going to go to those cities anyway because you want to go enjoy the cultural aspects of those cities. Windsor does not provide you a rich cultural experience because we keep giving these properties to landlords who close buildings and businesses and awesome things that are happening. So,
yeah. Fuck landlords.
Fuck you, landlords.
Fuck politicians.
Fuck
the
you.
Cops. Fuck your boss. Well, exactly. Don't fuck your boss, but you know what I mean. Well, maybe. I don't know. Well. It's your choice, I guess. But yeah, the usual. We should just say that for an hour every episode.
just air our grievances.
Yeah.
Fuck this. Fuck that.
Hey, we don't need Bilal. What?
No.
He's not even here. Fuck Bilal. He's not even Bilal. We can do this on our own.
Yeah. No, we need Bilal.
we do. Very much. All right. Oh, also, if you listen to the MMT episode that we just put out, Bilal's big mad, and we're going to have a big debate about it later.
Oh, my God.
We're going to have a debate episode down the line where...
The big debate.
The big debate, which we're not going to get into in this moment, but...
I'm not going to be on that podcast.
No.
I don't know what the fuck is going on. You guys were going off, and I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about, but I will... I learn by listening, and I learn by the... Like, it's interesting because the debate you guys were already having... It was helpful for me just to kind of hear what the arguments are. Yeah. Like, I kind of got a sense of what you guys were talking about, but yeah.
Yeah, we won't get into it. We're going to do it right now. I got my thoughts. But you can be a Marxist and also support MMT, or not support MMT. You can be a Marxist and acknowledge that MMT has value.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I say that.
To be determined.
Bilal does not say that. But yeah, thanks for listening. As always.
Okay, bye. Bye.
The radical left.